You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. This is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, April 4th, 2018.
I think the first step is for us to understand and to be concerned about the fate of the university. Mm-hmm. And I think many of us bury our head in the sand and move on with challenges of our day-to-day character.
Yeah.
And we miss the bigger picture in the long term.
In today's feature report, Michael Burovoy, Indiana University patent lecturer, joins Interchange host Doug Storm to discuss what to do about the crisis of the university. It's coming up later in the program in today's community conversation.
Also coming up in the next half hour, cell phone porting, how your cell phone can get stolen by someone, not even on the same continent. More on cell phone porting later in the broadcast, on a new edition of our Consumer Watchdog segment, Better Beware. But first, your daily headlines.
The bar Kilroy's on Kirkwood in downtown Bloomington had their alcohol permit approved by a county board this morning. Kilroy's alcohol permit was originally scheduled to be automatically renewed by the board 2 months ago, but concerned residents asked the Monroe County Board to reconsider that approval. Residents who argued against the automatic approval called remonstrators by the board or objected to Kilroy's management of social media and business practices. City of Bloomington Public Outreach Director Mary Catherine Carmichael spoke at the board's meeting this morning as a private citizen. Carmichael says over a dozen community members showed up at this morning's meeting to advocate on behalf of the bar.
I've been sitting in the audience throughout the meeting, and so I just started my comments with a question, and the question was, who's here in support of Kilroy's on Kirkwood who does not have a direct or indirect financial interest in their success? And there was one gentleman who could claim that, but everybody else there had a direct financial tie with the organization. So, of course, all the people there who were voicing their concerns, none of those people had any financial ties. So I just thought it was an important thing to take note of for the folks present that, the only people, for the most part, with the exception of one, again, speaking on their behalf would benefit financially from their success.
Carmichael's one of several Bloomington residents remonstrating against Kilroy's alcohol permit. She says for all the promises that she's seen the bar make, they've yet to really show their commitment to being a better actor in the community.
They seem to make a lot of promises, then disappear. And so I'm interested in some additional accountability. You know, I really want them to be a good corporate citizen. And they seem to say the right things, but I need them to follow up with action and really do those right things. And so, you know, we want them to be a fully engaged member of the community. We want a Kilroy's that actively works to protect its patrons. We want it to be a no-tolerance zone for sexual predation. We do not want it to promote binge drinking and other dangerous drinking behaviors through either its marketing practices or its corporate culture. And we want them to really participate in the broader community in a really meaningful way. This is I believe it's the highest grossing college bar in the United States. And I think that they have the resources to do better. But we've had an experience with them that proves that they will only do better if we insist that they do better. So I thought that was what was really good about today. This was a lot of people saying that we want to insist that they do better.
The Kilroy's franchise was the subject of community controversy twice last summer after Kilroy's Recess tweeted at billionaire Mark Cuban, quote, come check out your old place. We've got rid of the wet t-shirt contests, but kept the underage girls, unquote. Kilroy's faced criticism for a sign during last year's eclipse that read, quote, the sun is blacking out, so should you, unquote. The Monroe County Alcohol Tobacco Commission voted 2-1 to permit Kilroy's on Kirkwood to continue to serve alcohol. A local attorney, Catherine Leal, who sits on the commission, says due to a lack of excise police violations, the board had to consider three factors in the permit renewal process. One, the moral character of the owners. Two, whether criminal acts have been carried out on the premises. And three, whether or not the business constitutes a moral nuisance.
Well, I found that the evidence presented by the remonstrators, and indeed the evidence presented by Kilroy's themselves, established that the premises were a public nuisance, in my opinion, that there was substantial evidence supporting that finding. And that included Kilroy's presented a printout of police runs to their premises on Kirkwood. And over the period of time in question, there were approximately 288 police runs to Kilroy's on Kirkwood, including two for reports of sexual assault. And to me, that constitutes a public nuisance. I have a real problem with that.
Catherine Lyle says the board expressed concerns about the binge drinking culture promoted by Kilroy's on Kirkwood, but were hopeful that the measures Kilroy's said it will take to train bartenders not to overserve customers would be helpful. WFIU manager Perry Metz stepped down from the commission after nearly a decade on the board earlier this year.
The commissioners have not filled that appointment, so there were only three of us, the standing state police excise officer, Lonnie Gibson, myself, and the mayor's new appointee, Karen Hal Fernandez, and this was her second meeting.
Kilroy's alcohol permit was renewed for another year, and Lyle says the commission can take any infractions or instances of wrongdoing into account during next year's permit application.
The founder of the group UndocuHoosiers Bloomington, William Palomo, is no longer affiliated with the immigrant advocacy organization. UndocuHoosiers Bloomington stated Palomo was removed from the organization after allegations of sexual abuse emerged in the fall of 2017. In a statement yesterday, UndocuHoosiers Bloomington board members wrote, quote, we ask that the organization's continuing hard work to support the undocumented and the documented community members not be associated with Palomo or his actions. And we encourage the community to reach out to the organization's current leadership directly rather than to Palomo when searching for support, unquote. UndocuHoosiers advocates on behalf of beneficiaries of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. The group also stated members or those interested in their activities could also reach out directly to board members via social media. UndocuHoosiers Bloomington did not return a WFHB inquiry for additional information by the time of this broadcast.
A Bloomington Fire Department captain accused of sexual misconduct did not report to work this morning, according to Bloomington Fire Department Chief Jason Moore. Captain Robert Sears was the target of a Bloomington Police Department sting after a detective discovered sexual messages between the 44-year-old city employee and a 14-year-old girl. The Indiana Daily Student reports that Chief Moore says the department is taking Sears' absence as a no-call, no-show. The Bloomington Board of Public Safety, which is the governing body responsible for both the city fire and police departments, isn't set to meet until April 17th, although the IDS reports a special session may be held to review Sears' case this Friday or next Monday. Sears spent two nights in jail and was placed on administrative leave pending formal charges.
Monroe County Public Works Director Lisa Ridge says the county road crews are working to fix potholes created by a wet spring. Ridge spoke about the issue in the April 4th meeting of the Monroe County Commissioners. She said Highway Superintendent John Chambers and Assistant Superintendent Matt Grubb are prioritizing high-volume roads.
Water is the worst thing that can happen to our roads for deterioration. So I know John and Matt will put together a thorough paving program this year, address the more highly traveled routes, and then move probably into the subdivision areas to address the concerns. We get emails and phone calls repeatedly, continuously, more right now about the potholes, and I know they are out there addressing those as fast as they can. But I encourage anybody to call and report them. You can call 812-825-5355, or you can call our department at 812-349-2555, or you can visit the county website, report it there, and then it gets directly sent to our department and the highway garage.
In the commissioner's work session, Ridge reported two county bridges were flagged in recent bridge inspection.
One on Allen Street, and we're working with the city of Bloomington on the best options for that one. And then the other one is Business 37 North, right where you will be entering I-69, State Route 37.
The weight limit for both bridges is now restricted to 14 tons. Ridge said emergency repair work on State Road 37 bridge will begin immediately.
The repairs would increase the weight limit back up to a 20-ton, which does not require posting, which would not require NDOT having to post it for I-69. And they can do it in this window that Business 37 North is already closed.
Ridge says the repairs will add 10 years to the life of the bridge. She says a more extensive rehabilitation can only come with federal support.
We plan on programming it into our, you know, five-year plan to try, when NDOT does a call for projects, to put this project in for federal funding as an 80-20 repair, because it'll be an expensive bridge because it's listed as a historic bridge also.
The next meeting of the Monroe County Commissioners is scheduled for April 11th at 10 a.m.
Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb met with Senators Joe Donnelly and Todd Young this morning at the Kennedy King Memorial in Indianapolis on the 50th anniversary of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s assassination. Robert Kennedy had arrived in Indianapolis immediately after the announcement of Martin Luther King Jr.'s assassination, and at the now Kennedy King Memorial, called for unity in the wake of national tragedy. Kennedy's speech in Indianapolis is widely credited with sparing the city from the widespread rioting that occurred in cities throughout the country following King's assassination. Robert Kennedy's daughter, Carrie Kennedy, as well as African-American statesman and civil rights icon John Lewis, were in attendance during this morning's ceremony.
Support for WFHB comes from Cardinal Spirits Distillery, located on the B-line. Cardinal Spirits has opened a new kitchen featuring local seasonal food made from scratch to complement their craft cocktails. Dinner is available Tuesday through Saturday at Cardinal Spirits, 922 South Morton Street. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. University of California at Berkeley sociologist Michael Burrovoy delivered the first of his two Indiana University Patton lectures on Tuesday, dealing with what he calls universities in crisis. These crises spring primarily from the dwindling of public funds and the construction of an administrative class that tends toward profligacy. He joined Interchange host Doug Storm in our WFHB studios to discuss the crisis and what might be done about it.
We talked a little bit about expertise and politics and high impact, things of this nature, and slow scholarship. Also, one of the issues that this seems to be about as well is that universities are political now more so than they had been. Part of all this business agenda tends to be a political agenda as much as anything else. Political agenda to serve a business agenda. I don't know how to separate them anymore. This is the decision the universities have taken already, or at least the people in charge of universities, right? So your conversations about trying to get back some power to the people who actually work in the universities, who are doing this scholarship and trying to convey knowledge and maybe do understand themselves as creating citizens, thinkers, people who have awareness of global issues, but not just so they can make use of them.
Right, themselves. Right? Right.
Yeah. So, you know, how is it that you contend you can wrest that back from the board of trustees at Indiana University that's, right. you know, full of right. business leaders, a Republican right. governor, an entrepreneurial right. President?
Right.
So what are we supposed to do, or what are you supposed
right.
to do?
Well, I think, you're absolutely right. I think the first step is for us to understand and to be concerned about the fate of the university. Mm-hmm. And I think many of us bury our head in the sand and move on with challenges of our day-to-day character and we miss the bigger picture and the long term. So the first thing is to actually generate debate and discussion about where we're going, whether it's right or it's wrong. That's not the issue. Let's recognize what is actually happening to the university.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I argue is a sort of like a community project, but there is also an accountability project that we, in a sense, can no longer consider ourselves as the ivory tower.
Mm-hmm.
We have to not just bring people in, whether it's students, whether it's people with different perspectives onto campus. We have to move the campus into the community.
Mm.
We have to be accountable to, if we're a public university, we have to be accountable to publics. Mm-hmm. So we have mm-hmm. to, in a sense, recognize what are the issues that actually people face, and we have to be present in those communities, recognizing their interests, their concerns, and their needs. That is the only way, it seems to me, one can re-legitimate the university at this moment in history. And the idea ultimately is to refund the university as a public university, and that would come from the legislature. Now, well, yeah. I mean, if you look at the data on Republicans versus Democrats, you will see that amongst Republicans and Republican independent Republicans, the positive view towards the university as having a positive impact on society has moved down from 56% it was to, I think it was now 34%.
Hmm.
So, you know, the university is losing heavily in the legitimacy amongst a large section of the population. The Democrats have slightly increased, it's up to about 70%.
Mm.
So if you've got a Republican legislature, you're in principle, you've got a harder and higher road to climb than if you've got, as you have in California, a Democratic legislature.
Right, right.
So what we are doing, various interest groups in higher education, not just the University of California, we have put out a proposal that there should be what we call the $48 fix.
Mm-hmm.
And the $48 fix, which now becomes the $66 fix.
Okay.
But anyway, essentially it's a 12.5% income surcharge on income tax. So mm-hmm. everybody will pay 12.5% more on their income tax than before.
Mm-hmm.
And for the medium income, that would be, was $48, it's now $66. And of course, if you earn a lot more than the medium income, you're going sure. to be paying a lot more. But anyway, that's the idea, that's the proposal, and we're trying to push mm-hmm. this through the legislature. And in principle, the legislature is not totally opposed to this, because it is actually giving money, in a sense, to students, not to these profligate administrators.
Right.
The profligate administrators are very skeptical about this approach, because they think they're going to lose mm-hmm. actual money out of this, because, of course, they do get they're not sure whether they will recoup the losses from the state.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that's the proposal, somewhat controversial proposal, that we are putting forward to the legislature, and we'll see how far we get. But at least, you know, what has happened is that Bernie Sanders really put this on the agenda,
mm-hmm.
the idea of debt-free higher education.
Right.
And so it is now a project that is seen to be somehow more feasible,
mm-hmm.
and actually you can actually propose such things, whereas I think he made a huge difference in that regard.
Hmm.
So, yeah, so anyway, that's the political strategy that is emerging from this. But even if it doesn't work, it is generating debate and discussion.
Again, that was Interchange host Doug Storm speaking with Michael Burrivoy, UC Berkeley sociologist, best known as promoting public sociology, such as what is taking place tonight on campus at Franklin Hall at 7:30, when he delivers his second patent lecture, Marxism Engage Bourdieu. You'll be able to hear Storm's full conversation with Burrivoy on Interchange Tuesdays at 6 p.m. on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar-powered generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, our weekly consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
Okay, let's talk about your cell phone. I know you've got one, just about everyone does now. Someday we may get to the stage where they're routinely implanted at birth, just after the umbilical cord is cut, but that wouldn't increase the percentage very much. And the average person now spends 4 hours a day looking at their phone. 4 hours! That's 1/6 of your entire life, and 1/4 of the time you're awake. Losing your cell phone, or having it stolen, has become a major life disaster, so I hope you found a way to back up all your data. But now, it's possible to have your cell phone stolen right out from under your eyes by a thief who isn't even standing on the same continent. It's called cell phone porting, and the Better Business Bureau has issued an urgent warning about it. Here's how it works. First, the fraudsters have to steal your identity. But this is now a simple routine operation, because your name, address, social security number, date of birth, and lots more information has already been stolen in one of the massive data breaches we've seen over the past few years. Just last week, the wearable fitness tracker Fitbit admitted they got hacked and the personal info of 150 million people was sucked out of their database to be traded and sold all over the world on the dark web. Well, then, the bad guy, or bad gal, crime being an equal opportunity business, contacts your cell phone provider impersonating you with that stolen data. They say the phone has been lost or stolen and ask that the number be transferred or ported to another phone, maybe with the same provider or maybe a different one. Zap! Suddenly, your phone shuts down and says it's good for emergency calls only. And that's a flare-lit tip-off that you've been ripped off. This gives the crook complete access to all the data on your phone and all the different apps and accounts you use your phone for, even ones with two-factor identification, like your bank account, where you have to get a one-time security code to log in, are wide open because the code now goes to the criminal. So what can you do about it? Well, if your phone suddenly stops working, go to another phone and call your provider immediately. And if you haven't yet had this problem, get in touch with your provider right now and have them put extra security on your account. A passcode that has to be entered to unlock your phone. A passcode that is not stored on your phone or computer, but kept only inside your brain. AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, they all offer extra security, but you have to ask for it. Reports of this fraud have doubled in the last year, so don't wait. Do it today. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at wfhb.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@wfhb.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, in partnership with Community Access Television Services. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish. Our feature was produced by Doug Storm.
Our engineer today is Wes Martin. Our theme music provided by Ben Lumsdaine, Danny Graff, and Scott Schmadeke. Executive producer, Wes Martin. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. Recognized among the best newscasts in 2016 by the Indiana chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@wfhb.org. And stay tuned for the Shortwave Report, bringing you news from around the world. That's coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a Daily Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcast of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.